Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. And today's show, it's an interesting title, Health Care as We Age. So what really involves is the health itself, but then, you know, places that we would, that people go to as they age. We've got a great guest with us. All our guests are great, but this one is illustrious. How's that? And thanks to Barry Baines for making the connection with our guests. We have a great crew that always does our background research for us. Also, our production, and also our marketing as well. Maddie Levine Wolf. And we have Aaron Collins, Deandra Howard, Matthew Campbell, Sheridan Nygaard. And of course, we have Clarence Jones, who's a co-host on this show along with me. And then Barry Baines is our medical advisor, par excellent. So thank you to all of you, your wonderful, wonderful colleagues. HUMAD Partnership is our sponsor. You could check them out. It's a great community health organization. Check them out at humanpartnership.org. Check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. All our shows are on there. Our background research is on there. You have an opportunity to pose questions that we can get back to you on. Check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. So today, healthcare as we age. We have a wonderful guest with us. Dr. Abby Houts is a board-certified internist and geriatrician, graduated from the University of Minnesota Medical School in 2004 in a residency at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland. I was just out in Bethesda, close by.
Charm City,
exactly. She worked in a program for all-inclusive care for the elderly in Chicago before returning to Minneapolis. This is interesting. She worked in a senior care division at Hennepin County Medical Center, where she developed and ran a physician health call service for low-income homebound seniors in Hennepin County. Thank you for doing that. I mean, it's a missed care service for sure. Since 2019, she served as the medical director for ambulatory services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and maintains a small private geriatrics house call practice, wraparound house calls, which I'm sure she can allude to. This was great, though. I noticed this in her bio. She said, when not working as a physician, which could be a full-time thing for sure, serves as a chauffeur, private chef, and entertainment director for her four children. For those of us who are grandparents or have kids or grandkids, we know. So thank you for being with us today. It's a pleasure having you.
Yeah, nice to meet you all.
So, all right.
Well,
Where to start on this? Go ahead, Clarence.
Yeah, let me start with this, because Dr. Abby, I looked at the information that you're here. How did you get your start? What was your epiphany for this field? Because I think that it's always important for people to understand why are you so passionate about this particular topic.
Yeah, you know, I think I've thought a lot about that. I think part of it was my relationships with my grandparents growing up. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents, spent a lot of time with my grandma Marion in particular when I was young, and just had very close relationships with them all through my life through college and medical school. When I was starting to explore areas to get involved in medicine, I kind of gravitated toward what we call primary care. So family medicine, internal medicine, pediatrics, because I really liked the longitudinal relationships with patients. I liked getting to know people, you know, over years and years. I liked seeing them in sickness and in health. And within that field, I started to kind of explore what I might do with that. I had some opportunities during medical school to get some mentorship from Dr. Larry Kersner at Hennepin County Medical Center, who provided me with some opportunities after my second year of medical school, went out for a summer institute in geriatrics in Boston, had an opportunity to meet other people who are in the field of geriatric medicine. And you know, it's funny because you every specialty has a little bit of a flavor to it. And I went and I met all of these other geriatricians and all of these other medical students who were interested in geriatrics. And I just thought, these are my people. These are the people who sort of think the same way I do and approach things the same way I do. And it just really was a good fit for me. So when I was choosing a residency, I chose to interview at residencies where geriatrics was a priority, where they had big geriatrics programs, and I felt like I would get a really good education steeped in geriatrics principles. One of those was Johns Hopkins, and I went out to interview there thinking, boy, I don't know, this is a big, impressive place. I don't know if there's a place for me here. And I matched there, and it was really one of the best experiences of my life and really set me on this trajectory specifically of doing home visits and community-based care. They have a big elder house call program. I learned how to go into somebody's home and provide them the same kinds of services that we would provide them in the clinic. And that was really, you know, sort of all she wrote for me. Then that's all I wanted to do after that.
Thank you for sharing.
You know, I'll tell you, it's interesting. As you grow up, you know, obviously with your parents and everything, you really don't think about this aging stuff until all of a sudden, as adult children, then you're looking at your older parents and you realize, whoa, you know, we have to be connected. We as kids, their kids, have to be connected to their care
That's right.
going forward. And you know, speaking from experience, that's difficult because all of a sudden you're kind of thrust into it. And it affects not only the delivery of care, which, you know, Abby, for sure you can speak to, but also living arrangements that are safe and actually complement, if need be, their care. So we're getting older. I mean, at least theoretically and hopefully.
As my grandpa says, it beats the alternative,
yeah,
right?
correct. It's like my dad used to say, you know, how you doing? And he used to say, well, I'm vertical when I want to be, and I'm horizontal when I want to be, so it's a good day. So those types of things. But as we age, perhaps, and maybe you can speak to this, we're taking on different kinds of medical issues that maybe were around all the time, but we're taking them on more and more. And so maybe we should start with that, and then maybe we can talk about living arrangements for people and how that complements their care.
Sure. And I might make one more comment before I get to that, Stan, which is
Yeah.
in addition to being involved in our parents' care, it does change the dynamic a bit of our relationship with our parents,
Absolutely. Absolutely.
which also happens with spouses when you have one spouse who has a serious medical illness and the other spouse becomes a caregiver rather than a husband or a wife. It really does change the dynamic. And so that can be a difficult thing to navigate as well, is, you know, wanting your parents to continue to have as much autonomy as they are able to safely have while still helping them navigate the system.
Yeah. Or when
And
one parent passes away, and then all of a sudden you realize, okay, the kids have to kind of realize, okay, how do we take care of dad or mom now, going forward, and make sure that they're taken care of?
sure. And we see that a lot. And we see that couples who have lived together for decades have figured out each other's strengths and weaknesses and where to compensate for one another. And so what you
Yeah.
sometimes find is it appears that after dad dies, mom really goes downhill quickly. But that may not necessarily be the case. It may just be that dad had certain roles in the household and mom had certain roles, and mom never learned how to do dad's roles. And so things kind of fall apart a little bit. And so it's always a bit of figuring out, is this something mom really can't learn how to do and we need to bring some supports in around her? Or is this just something mom's never done and we can help her learn how to do this? So that's another piece of it.
And things can happen quickly, with let's just say older parents, all of a sudden somebody, a parent has a stroke out of nowhere, or a heart attack, or falls down. These things happen in an acute way, and the aftermath of it is chronic, or can be chronic. So.
Right. And so back to your original question or your original statement, yes, we are dealing with more medical issues as we age and the cumulative effects of chronic medical issues. So, you may have been diagnosed with diabetes in your 40s or 50s, but there are consequences to living with chronic diseases over decades that start to catch up with you at some point. So that has effects on your heart, or on your kidneys, or on your brain. Then there are issues that really seem most of the time connected with aging that we learn a little bit more about. So you mentioned that I did an internal medicine residency and then a geriatric medicine fellowship. What we learn in geriatric medicine fellowship are a little bit more in depth about issues that tend to be tied to aging or people are more at risk for as they age. So I'm thinking about things like dementia is a big one, delirium, osteoporosis, urinary incontinence, what we call polypharmacy, which is being on a number of different medications all at the same time. So there are the end result of chronic illnesses as we age. There are acute medical illnesses, like the example you gave, Stan. And then there are illnesses that, with some exceptions, tend to be more tied to older adults. And those are the kinds of things that in geriatric medicine we focus on.
I was struck by home care delivery that you do. I remember as a kid, my pediatrician making house calls. I said, well, walk into your house, with a little black bag and take care of you. And as the years went by, that disappeared. So I'm really struck by the fact that you're embracing that. So I wonder if you might want to chat about that a little bit.
I'd be happy to. I love house calls. I think it's a really interesting and valuable way to get to know people. We can make the best laid plan in a clinic visit, but if you can't practically carry it out at home, it really doesn't matter. Other things that we can see in a home visit that we might not get in a clinic visit is we can see the family dynamics. We can understand who's in the house and who's able to do what. We can do things like really get to the bottom of your medications. So for people who are on a lot of medications, sometimes that is just enlightening. Somebody's been to the hospital and gotten four prescriptions when they left there, and they've got their prescriptions from their primary doctor and they've got their prescriptions from their cardiologist, and you go look at their cabinet and it's just a pharmacy.
Right.
And to, that's a look that you really can't get in that way in a clinic setting. We can look at things like a refrigerator. Do they have adequate food? Do they have food that's not expired? We can look at how is their bathroom set up? Are there, ways that we can make it less likely that they're going to have a fall? Do they have throw rugs all over that they're going to trip over? So there are a lot of things that you can really learn from a home visit that you just can't in the clinic. It's also, speaking of changing dynamics, a really interesting way to be the foreigner, so to speak. When patients come into our clinic, they're anxious, they're in our space, it's sterile, we're in charge, we're setting the agenda. They've got a lot of different people coming in and out, poking and prodding at them. When you go into somebody's home, you're the guest. I ask where I can sit. I ask where they want me. I ask where they want to start. I ask who they want involved. So it's a real flip of who's in charge here, which I think really good for developing a relationship with a patient.
I think it's absolutely wonderful that you're doing this. Clarence, go ahead.
I'm agreeing with it. Thank you very much for this conversation. Is there a list? I mean, we're talking about seniors getting older,
Yeah.
and we're talking about caregivers. Is there some kind of list that we should have? I mean, to help to prep us. I mean, I know you can't cover everything, but is there a list of things that we should be at least considering, as we get to this point of healthcare as we age?
So a few things off the top of my head. I mean, it would be more a novel than a list, I think, if we thought about all of the things. One of the things that we really focus on in geriatric medicine is functioning. And so we're really looking for ways in which somebody's functioning is changing. So you may look for things like, is somebody going out less often? Is somebody self-limiting where they're driving? Is somebody, using their furniture to navigate around the house, instead of, walking freely or having more difficulty getting out of a chair? Those are things that start to indicate to us that there's something going on, either with your physical or your cognitive functioning. So, along with the other things that I just spoke about that we look at in the home are things that you can look at in your parents' home. Look at their fridge, look at their medicine cabinet, look at their bathroom. Is their bathroom clean or is there urine on the floor that might indicate they're having difficulty getting to the bathroom in time? These are all little clues that we look at to indicate something's wrong and maybe we need to go talk with a doctor and check that out. Other things that I think are super important for everybody, but particularly as we get older and should be thinking about, one would be healthcare directives, advanced directives. What are your wishes for your healthcare as you get older? What aren't your wishes for your healthcare as you get older? And even more important than that, who do you trust to make decisions on your behalf at such a time that you aren't able to articulate your own wishes? So those, are even important for younger people because, as you note, Stan, you never know. Something can happen very quickly. So it's important for people like me with young children to have those things articulated. But particularly as we get older, making sure that we've had really good conversations with people that we trust about what our values are and what's important to us. And I try when I talk with patients about healthcare directives not to get too into the weeds about medical specifics, but really focus more on what are your goals, what are your things that are important to you, and I can help you make whatever medical decisions are consistent with where you're trying to get, as opposed to asking somebody who has no medical background, do you want this or do you not want this? Because that's a really hard question to answer when you don't understand all of the implications that are being asked. Looks like Barry has something to add here.
Yeah, Barry, go.
Actually, you were, saying all the things that I would say as well. But I did want to go back to that focus of the home environment. And a very famous philosopher, Yogi Berra, said you can see a lot just by looking. And I think this is something that's important not only for, in Abby's case, doing those house calls, but as children of aging parents, or friends of aging parents. I mean, again, we always have a public health outlook on this show, more or less, and talking about community. And oftentimes it's the social group who can help identify some of these things. The point I was going to make was not about advanced care planning and advanced directives, but sort of as a follow-up on the kind of things to look at. And one of the overarching things are, well, what can we prevent? And one of them is the safety things, where falls in particular, the hazards that can be in a home are really there's a lot of them. It can be like a minefield going through sometimes your home. And that the idea of falls, which for people as they age, so you have osteoporosis, so you don't want to fall. I mean, so that's what I say. I'm very careful. I don't want to fall because when you're older and you fall, you break. And that usually causes a downward spiral for that ability, not only to function physically, but also then impair cognition as people go down that path. So I think one of the pieces again is to reinforce this idea of look observe and actually see what you're looking at. The thing that I would like to pose here is, when these things are identified, is there an easy script that family and friends can use when they identify something that might be a danger to, my mom or my uncle or whatever, that people can understand how to broach that? Because everybody doesn't want it. You don't want to take away the autonomy and independence, but you want to keep people safe so that they can be independent for a longer period of time. So I'm just wondering, in your experience, if there has been a particular counsel that you've given families for how to approach those things when the yellow flags or red flags go up.
Yeah, I think in a way you answered your own question a little bit, which is to say, I'm concerned about your safety. This is something that I've identified that I think is a safety concern. I want you to be able to stay here in your home where you want to stay. So if we're going to be able to do that safely, these are the things that I think we need to address. So you keep bringing it back to their goal. Their goal, their goal, their goal. So this isn't about me. This isn't in furtherance of my intruding in your life. This is, I'm noticing this. I think it doesn't meet, in the same way that I was talking about advanced directives, I think this isn't consistent with where you want to get to. So can we address this problem so that you can remain here safely? Because I really want that for you, because I know you want that for you. I think that's the best way to approach it, is always focusing on the end game of where that person wants to be.
So, let me tell you a personal story. So my mother, who has now passed away, she was living by herself in her home, and she came down with a urinary tract infection and boom, fell down in the house, and obviously nobody was there. And the only way that my sister and I were able to determine that was, we haven't heard from mom. We better go over and check, and lo and behold. So those are kind of the kick into place situations where, again, it happened. Urinary tract infections can cause confusion and disorientation, et cetera, and boom, in this case, she fell down. It eventually led to us looking and say, having, excuse me, the conversation, okay, with mom, right? The infamous, there's kind of typical conversations. There's housing conversations, taking away the keys to the car conversations, those kinds of things. But it led to that. Okay. And then we had to discuss with her options. And maybe you can talk to about that as far as living options, maybe not in an immediate situation like I'm talking about, but in general, what are we talking about for people as they age?
I mean, there's a wide variety of options for living environments and for care in any of those environments. And so, fortunately and unfortunately, a lot of it depends on the resources you have available to you. I certainly have people who are entirely bedbound and have been for prolonged periods of time, entirely dependent for their care, and are able to remain at home because they have family who has the means to hire in-home care around the clock or to supplement the family's care with in-home care around the clock. And so, you know, it depends on what you're able to cobble together and what you're able to afford. Some people really are able to remain in their homes even when they're pretty functionally or cognitively impaired. Then there are a wide variety of more structured living environments that people can consider. So there's sort of what you might think about as independent living. Maybe some people would call it senior housing, where there is, you know, an apartment complex, you have your own space, you do your own things. Many of them then have the option or ability to add on services as function declines in sort of a la carte piecemeal fashion, depending on what it is that you need. Assisted living facilities operate in much the same way. So assisted living facilities, usually you are paying a monthly rate for your room in the facility, which is usually, you know, an apartment that's all yours, excuse me, plus maybe some light cleaning services, and then things that you need on top of that, like I need help with my shower a couple of times a week, or I need my medications set up for me once a week, or I need my medications actually delivered to me twice a day. Depending on what you need, there'll be additional add-on charges every month on top of that, you know, rent that you're paying. After that, you move into more of a skilled nursing facility kind of environment where there are nurses there around the clock. You know, they're pretty much providing you all of the medical care you need. So there's not a lot of opportunity to be doing things like taking medications independently. So you really, where you're going to look to live depends on what your needs are and what level of oversight you might need. There are also what some would call continuous care retirement communities where you're able to sort of escalate care in place over the time that you're there, depending on how your health changes.
So for a son or a daughter that's trying to take care of their their parent, what do you recommend for them? Okay, so it's like, you know, it's one thing dealing with an immediate situation. It's another thing being proactively prepared.
Yeah.
So what do you recommend, or what do you see?
So in some ways, it's a little difficult to be too proactively prepared because you want to make your decisions based on the actual care needs. But what I do always, always recommend is to go places. There is nothing like actually walking through a place, meeting with people, getting a feel. Like I was saying, when I was, you know, going through medical school and residency and meeting people and got this sense, this is where I belong. There's different flavors, if you want to put it that way, to different living environments. And finding one that feels right is really important. And there's no way to do that other than visiting. So I really recommend visiting several places. You know, you obviously, people need to take other considerations into account. Is this close to my kids? Is this close to my church? Is this close to my doctors? Some facilities have doctors and nurse practitioners who come right in and provide the care. Is that something I'm interested in? Or is it important to me to continue going out to the doctor as long as I can? So there's all sorts of different things to consider.
Yeah. Not easy.
It's not easy. It's not easy. And it's not a, I think one of the things that makes it difficult is it's not a one size fits all.
Correct. Correct. You know, I remember, and Clarence, I'll get to you in just a second. I remember when we were dealing this with my mother, she went into an independent living situation.
Yeah.
Okay. But if she needed to up that, the assisted living, she could remain in her place, and all you had to do is basically flip a switch And they lock the medicine cabinets, and then somebody comes into her place. So it's less disruptive for, in this case, my mother, so she wouldn't have to move again. Okay, which is advantageous. Go ahead, Clarence.
So we've talked a lot about parents, children taking care of their parents with this issue. What about for me? What are the things that I should be thinking about? What list is there for me to be considerate of as I'm thinking about becoming more seasoned?
I think it's very similar, Clarence. I think it's ensuring that you've identified people who you trust to either help articulate what you want or to help navigate the system so that the arrangements that you want are put into place. I think it's really giving some thought to what's important to you, where it's important for you to be, who it's important for you to be around, because that will dictate a lot of these decisions about what's on the table and what's not on the table for you in terms of where you might be living as you age. In terms of, other things to think about, where do people get in trouble early? Well, people get in trouble early with things that are complex tasks to navigate. So I think about when I'm thinking about early places where people get in trouble with potentially high consequences, I'm thinking about things like driving, I'm thinking about things like medication management, I'm thinking about things like financial management. And so those are areas where you want to be thinking about. I just think, let me just say it this way. You want to be thinking,
Yeah, right.
am I having more difficulty driving at night? Am I feeling more anxious when I'm driving places that I'm not familiar with? Is it time to start limiting to where I'm feeling comfortable? Those are the kinds of things that you want to be thinking about. And those are the places, like I said, we call it executive functioning, multi-step complex tasks that have to be done in a certain order while you're taking in lots of information from the world around you. Those are the places where people can get in trouble early on, and the places where to just be paying attention for any little slips and bolstering yourself if you're starting to see them. Oops, I paid my electric bill twice last month. That's not like me.
I think this is a very interesting conversation because I believe that we want to stay in control for so long that if we, if we start slipping, like paying your bill twice a month, I just say, oh, I'm just getting old. But I don't think that it's enough for me to take action. And so I think we have to be a little bit more, I don't want to say mature. We just have to be a little bit more realistic, I think. In terms of really asking for help, when we get to this point. That's just me thinking right now. I don't know if a situation came up, I don't know if I do it or not, but I'm just saying, it just seems like
No,
if I had anything to do.
it's hard. And and to the point about the bills, I mean, everybody makes mistakes, right? So, you're not going to pull the trigger on somebody else needs to do this for me because I've made one mistake necessarily, but it's just a thing to pay attention to. And if it becomes a pattern, then we want to start looking for not necessarily even ways to take that away from you, but ways to put safeties in or checks and balances in so that you can continue to do as much as you can for yourself without having any bad outcomes from them.
Barry.
Yeah, I'd like to weigh in on this a little bit, not only to help Clarence, but also me and Stan, because we're in that aging cohort. Everyone is familiar with the saying, it takes a whole community to raise a child. I think it also takes a community to support healthy aging. And in particular, and I'll use the example of I have a group of friends that we've been together for 40 plus years. And when we talk about aging healthily, the importance of that social connection is really good on two fronts. Number one, it keeps you stimulated mentally. And that's really helpful, and also physically as well. So whether it be, some kind of physical activity is really important. But even beyond that, when you have a group of friends, everybody joke, at least in my group, we joke about how we're getting older and some of the things that we wind up doing that we didn't used to do. But you also get, in a very non-threatening way, everybody has their way of compensating for some of those things, and it doesn't mean that you're, totally losing it, but it's something to be expected as you get older. And having a group to share that with in a non-threatening way can also give you some ideas for how to adapt and compensate for those kind of things. Because one of the other things that we didn't talk about is, demographically, what's happened in this country in general. When I grew up and my grandmother became frail and couldn't live in her apartment, she moved in with us. And so you had a lot of multi-generational caregiving that was built in place. But now people live all over the country, and it's a lot more difficult to be there. Although again, things like Zoom have really helped to keep people connected, perhaps a little bit more. But that's where I think there's been more reliance on that community of friends and neighbors and things like that to sort of the glue that sort of keeps things together. And then again, when you can combine it with a medical provider that gets linked in some way, I think the likelihood of better outcomes probably goes up. And Abby, you probably are more familiar with some of the research that hopefully would support my hypothesis about what seems to make things work a little bit better. So,
Yeah, no, I think there's very good research around the importance, particularly to cognitive functioning, of remaining socially active and socially engaged.
Our research team put together some interesting information, tips for healthy aging, and I'm wondering if you might comment on this. So one is being as you age, being aware of nutrition, your activity level, your mental functioning, which we just touched on a little bit, your social well-being, which Barry alluded to, emotional well-being, injury prevention, and healthcare routine. So I wonder if you might, does that make sense? That list?
I mean, it makes sense, but if you think about it, it makes sense for all of us,
Correct. Good
right?
point. Very good point.
I 30 and 40 and 50 year old will do just as well to follow that advice as a 60 or 70
Exactly.
or 80
Good
year old.
point. Very good point.
I think nutrition is important for a number of reasons, for muscle strength, for bone health, for cognition, all sorts of reasons. Physical activity, the same way. In fact, physical activity is just as important for your cognitive health and your mental health as it is for your physical health. So all of those recommendations make good sense for older adults and younger adults.
It was interesting. I've said on this show before, I volunteer at Methodist Hospital in their orthopedic unit and see knee patients after they've come out of knee surgery. And many of them are in their 70s, 80s. And it was interesting. Just yesterday, I saw a woman. She was 73 years old. Her daughter was there. And the daughter asked me, she said, "Okay, mom now has had her knee replaced. What should I expect going forward?" Okay, so it was interesting. So in other words, the mother obviously is going through this, but her daughter was saying, my mom is basically older. Are there things that I need to be aware of now?" I thought that was a very insightful question for sure. Another point I want to bring up is this. For anybody living alone, who's frankly, again, to your point, Abby, is it, I think it's important for everybody. Who's your safety call? Okay, if something happens, who's your safety call? Like, is it a neighbor? Is it a family member? Who is it that you can call in the immediacy of a situation if you need help? Do you deal with that with some of the patients that you see?
I think it's important in that direction. Who can I call if I'm having difficulty? But I also think in the opposite direction, who's going to call me and check in on me?
Good
So
point.
is there a plan? We've all heard some of these horrific stories about, well, I mean, look at the Gene Hackman story just recently of, somebody was down for several days before somebody figured it out, and could the outcome have been different had someone known? And so, it's not just if I'm in a crisis, who can I call, but who's going to be regularly checking in to make sure I'm doing okay? And if they can't get a hold of me for a day, have a plan for a welfare check or something like that. Have somebody else who has a set of keys to the house who can go check in. So I think the plan in both directions is important.
You make a very, very good point. It's good for all of us. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be in your role. So I want to talk about your service, basically, that you provide this in-home care. How does somebody connect with that?
So we have a website, a phone number that people can call to connect with it. What I'll say about physician house calls, and one reason why there isn't more of that happening like there used to be, is that it's frankly a pretty inefficient way to take care of people. I can't see 10 or 12 patients in their own homes in a morning the way I can if I'm sitting in a clinic and everybody's coming to me and the nurse is putting them in the room and I'm just walking, room to room back and forth. And our healthcare environment, our reimbursement environment is really set up to support volume of patients seen and procedures. And so when you're spending a lot of time with one person, and not doing any procedures, it's a pretty inefficient and not very profitable way to take care of people. So I'll start with that about why there isn't more of that. I think as we move into, hopefully, we've been talking about this for 2 decades now or something, but more outcomes-based models of care, that maybe there'll be some more value placed on this kind of delivery, because it is the right way to care for certain types of people. So it's not a great way to care for somebody who has every ability to get into a doctor's office. But for some people where it's really difficult to get in, it's the best way to care for them, because otherwise they're just going to wait until they're in an emergency, in a crisis, and end up in an emergency room rather than dealing with a problem before it comes to that level of critical. So that's kind of my spiel about house calls in general. So I go out into the home and I see people who are homebound for one reason or another. I would say that in my personal practice, the largest proportion of my patients has been homebound related to advanced dementia and behavioral issues related to their dementia. So maybe it's very frightening for them to get into the car and be sitting in a clinic with a bunch of strangers in a strange environment. Or maybe their dementia has progressed to the point where they're bedbound and it's difficult for them to get out. Some of this has been attenuated a little bit over the past few years, really in the pandemic, with the increasing use of telehealth. So some of those patients have been able to maintain their regular primary care providers via telehealth visits, but that a little bit on the chopping block with Medicare here. It was supposed to end at the end of this month, and now it's just been extended through September. So we'll see what happens with Medicare being willing to continue to reimburse telehealth services. But otherwise, this is really the best way to care for those homebound folks.
Abigail,
So
I want to just
go
thank
ahead.
you. Yeah, I just want to thank you for that. I mean, for that transparency, because I was thinking about the same thing. Why don't we have more of these kinds of services? Because we know that people need that. But I think you very clearly stated why we don't have more. And so thank you. But I do thank you for the work that you are doing.
Sure. And I
Yeah,
think
I'm.
there are groups that, I think it's more common for groups that will go into a facility, right? An assisted living facility or even a residential care home or a group home, because you have a quorum of people. You can see 5 or 6 or 10 or 20 or 30 people. It's essentially moving your clinic into a facility. I think where I saw a real gap or where I came in was in individuals living in their own personal homes, where it's just one or maybe a couple who need the care. It's hard to find somewhere that will go out and do that kind of work. So that's where I saw, I guess, an opportunity for providing a service that I didn't see elsewhere.
So Abby, are there, with the type of work you're doing, the care that you're providing, is it specific, for instance, to the metropolitan area here? Are there other programs like this going on nationally, or are you unique?
No, there are certainly other physicians nationally who do home visits. There are home visit programs. A lot of them are housed, like how I learned how to do house calls, in academic medical centers that sort of absorb the cost of doing that as, an outreach program, or recognizing that it's important in other ways for training, for teaching. Fewer freestanding programs like that where physicians are going out. That being said, I'm hard pressed to find a physician who hasn't done a house call or a few house calls for a patient that where it was really just the appropriate thing to do at the
Gotcha.
time. And so when I was at Hennepin, one of my goals was to, and what I did was bring residents out with us to show young trainees, even if this isn't going to be how you practice medicine regularly, this is not that scary. This is a thing you can do. You know how to do this work. It's a different environment, but the medicine doesn't change. So, when you find a scenario where this is really the best or the only way to care for one of your patients, to help people feel empowered that they know how to do that, how to see somebody at home.
So, one last question I have for you is, how do you connect with necessary types of care? For instance, if you go in and see a patient in their home and you realize, you know what, we need to do some lab tests. So what do you do in order to get that accomplished for that patient?
So there are in-home phlebotomy services.
Ah, okay,
There
good.
are in-home radiology services. So the same companies that go out to nursing homes to do X-rays, you can get them to go in a private home. So when I'm seeing a patient at home, I can get, I mean, obviously I can't send them through a CT scanner at home, but if I
Right,
need a
right, right.
plain X-ray, if I need an ultrasound, if I need an EKG, if I need a lab, there are companies that we can call to do that. And
Great.
they will go out there. They will, for the service, they bill the patient's insurance, usually Medicare. There is sometimes an extra out-of-pocket charge for the con sort of a convenience fee, so to speak, for going to the home. But then, the lab itself would be run through insurance. So there are ways to get that done. I would say that it has gotten, over the course of the last few years, it's gotten a little bit more difficult to find in-home phlebotomy services. A lot of lab draws and things used to be done through long-term care pharmacies, and due to, staffing issues everywhere, those services have disappeared to some extent over the last few years.
Okay, Clarence, last thoughts. You're on mute.
Yeah, no. Thank you. I have really it has really caused me, this conversation has really caused me to think about some things. And so I very much appreciate you for sharing, and definitely appreciated your journey, and also the fact that I'm thinking about, quite honestly, I'm thinking about organizations that are working with senior populations, and how important it might be to talk about what you've been talking about, and to see if there can be additional support for our communities. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Barry, last thoughts.
They say the age of the population that's increasing the most are the centenarians, all right?
That's
People
true.
over 100, and with people living longer, obviously the effects of aging play a role. And I'm very appreciative of taking a topic that's really broad, but being able to give a perspective and get it down to some of the more important things that all of us need to hear about, need to attend to, and should be repeated over and over again, because things are forever changing. And I think some of the priority things that we highlighted here today, again, it's just the beginning of the questions we need to ask and just be observant of and pay attention to, so that all of us can live as independently and as meaningful lives that we can. And Abby, as you had highlighted, the idea of what are your goals? You got to think about what's important to you, and that's very different from person to person. But articulating those will really help to create the kind of plan of care that you need as you age to meet your goals as well as you possibly can. And goals do change over time as well. It's not, you're not locked into that. And so we know that. But for the time being, then let's do what we can do. So thank you so much for being on our show. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
And
thank you.
finally, to get to be with you face to face.
Yeah,
Abby and I go back actually a ways, but it was always.
we've run in the same circles for a long time, but it took
Yeah.
us a while to
Connect,
actually be
huh?
in the same place at the same time. So
No, I was
well,
very
glad.
appreciative of you coming on the show. Thank you.
I'm glad Health Chatter brought you together. Abby, thank you so much. This has been wonderful. If you have any particular information that you think would be useful to put on our website, we would ha happily share that with the listening audience in the transcript of the show. So feel free to get that
Yeah.
to us. This was it was really a learning experience, even for me. I'm older, but I learned a lot. And so thank you for the service that you provided, the insights that you gave us today. It was great having you on the show.
You're very welcome. It's very nice to meet you. And I actually I'm giving a talk next week and had put together a handout about sort of early signs of cognitive and functional impairment and some senior resources. So I'm happy to share that with you as well.
Yeah, pop it over and we'll get that out on our website. So thanks for being with us. For you, the listening audience, thanks for being with us today. We have great shows coming up. We have one coming up on quality improvement and quality assurance in healthcare. And then one that connects with this one, we're going to be doing a show on Alzheimer's coming up as well. So thanks to everybody out in the listening audience. Everybody, keep health chatting away.